The Travelers has generated more than $38 million for charity since 1952. So I love the fact that not golf, not just the Travelers. I mean, the Travelers does a great job, but all of golf is so charitable. In fact, Brad Faxon's charity has raised, this is their 20th straight year that he's doing his charity event, and they've raised a lot of money too in those 20 years. I have a charity event that I do every year called the Anne LaGaurie Foundation Charity Golf Classic, and this it was just 2 weeks ago. We actually had the U.S. Open trophy at my golf event, my charity golf event, which was at Atlantic Golf Club, and it was wonderful. Now I cannot. Brad, are you on the line? Good morning, Brad Faxon.
Good morning, Ann. How?
Hey, there you are.
How's it going?
It's good. It's good. I just I'm glad we connected with you, and I can hear you in my headpiece here, and all is well. All is well. So you have a big week coming up.
It's a big week in a couple different ways. It's our 20th CVS Health Charity Classic that we've had here in Rhode Island, a Rhode Island Country Club. And today's the big pro-am. They have 56 different groups go out, and then tomorrow's the main competition. But more importantly, Billy Andrade and I have co-hosted this event, and we passed the $20 million mark in charitable giving last year, and this year we hope to raise another $1.5 million for charity.
That's a amazing. I know you and Billy go back a long way, and to be involved with this event for 20 straight years is just really says a lot. And you said you raised over $21 million for charities in the state of Rhode Island, so many different beneficiaries, which is terrific.
Well, there's hundreds of different charities that have received the money, and whether all over the map too of where it's gone. It's become the single biggest fundraiser in the state. We have a great field of players this year. We do an unusual format, and we have six players from three different tours. So we have an LPGA, PGA Tour, Senior Tour, and we play two best balls of the three. So last year, Billy Andrade, Keegan Bradley, and Brooke Henderson won the event. And I'm playing this year. I got Rory McIlroy and Soyeon Yoo, former number one player in the world on the LPGA Tour. They're coming up. We have such a great field. It's so exciting.
Oh, that's great. I just love the fact that you do that. And I know back in 2005, the Golf Writers Association of America recognized you and Billy for these efforts, giving you guys the Payne Stewart Award, and you've received the Charles Bartlett Award. I just think it's great that you're recognized for your good work.
Well, it's certainly nice. We didn't start off trying to do this stuff for charity so we'd receive awards. We genuinely wanted to give money away to charity. So yeah, we're lucky because Rhode Island's, as you said, it's a small place, but we've had just such a huge amount of golfers come from this state. The Quigleys, Dana and Brett, are from here. Obviously Billy and I and a host of other players have played the tour for at least a little while.
I love it. Well, you are a golf analyst for Fox and just covered the U.S. Open at Shinnecock. And did you ever imagine the controversies that would have emerged from there, on the Saturday?
Well, I was hoping we wouldn't have to talk about that post after having to wait 14 years to go back to one of the greatest courses in the world to see that again. Yeah, it was disappointing. I think it's controllable. And again, it's difficult to judge. Everything you have to do to make a course as hard as it can play while still being as fair as it can play. And it just seemed like two or three hole locations on Saturday got a little bit on the edge where players got a little angry. You remembered Zach Johnson's interview saying the course is done. And no, that brings, you never wanted to see what happened to Phil Mickelson happen. I think that he just reached the point of temporary insanity out there and subsequently apologized a few days later. But the real focus should have been on Shinnecock and Brooks Koepka, and that's not what we're talking about, unfortunately.
Right. I said that a little earlier in my intro, but I just getting back to the USGA for a second. you know, do you think Shinnecock should continue to be in the U.S. Open rotation? I was reading an article in USA Today, Brad, that Gary D'Amato wrote, that he said the reality is that the USGA cannot bring Shinnecock to the edge without going over it. Do you agree?
No, I don't agree. I think they certainly can. And, you know, I hate to say it's a game of inches because it's a game of inches, and maybe on three holes it's a game of feet, you know, just having the whole location in a place that wasn't on the edge. But, you know, it's interesting to listen to all the pundits afterwards. It's easy to second guess this stuff. You know, there's so much advancement in technology and the equipment of the game, whether it's the golf ball, the club head, the shaft, the weight of the shaft. But the real advancements in technology, in agriculture and the agronomy, you know, we're trying to see how tight we can get fairways mown, how far the ball can roll out of there, the speeds of the greens. You know, it's incredible how fast you can get greens. And when you have an old set of greens that are like Shinnecock Hills that have so much movement in them, undulation in them, it's hard to play at today's green speeds. And maybe we don't need to do that. Maybe we'd be better off with a green speed of 10 rather than 13 to allow the ball not to roll crazy. And I honestly believe that having slower greens is something you have to have more skill to putt well at. When you have to hit the putt a little firmer, I think your stroke has to be a little bit better. You have to be a little more certain.
Well, I just think the USGA should really let these classic courses be, and you know, and accept low scores. I mean, if that's the case, you know, just kind of let it flow the way it's meant to be.
Well, think about the two holes locations that were the most dramatic were 13, 15.
That's right. On Saturday.
Right. You might make an argument the 14th hole was impossible or ridiculous where it was because no player made a birdie there. Nobody got within 39 feet in two. But if those holes were cut literally a foot different from where they were, you don't see this happening. And, yeah, how do you know? How do you control that? And I think the USGA has to do some real soul searching on how to do this setup, because one over par won the event. And it really wouldn't have changed much if those two hole locations were different on Saturday. So the course certainly played like it should. The wind was like they expected. It wasn't ridiculously hard. Balls were still holding, you know, into the wind shots. You saw that. Fairways were wide, so players could hit driver. I mean, it had everything that you'd want to see in a U.S. Open except for two crazy hole locations on one day.
Right. It's too bad. But it ended well, as we said, with Brooks Koepka defending his title. Let's move on to your game. Now, you're going to play in the Senior Open Championship, which actually is going to be at St. Andrews, right?
Well, it is, yes. Yeah. Before that, this coming Tuesday morning, we fly from Rhode Island to Colorado Springs. Fox covers the Senior U.S. Open here in the United States, and then the Senior British Open is at St. Andrews. A little bit later in July, and so I'm going to moonlight as a golfer for another.
I love it.
Yeah, which is fun.
So now it's the first time that St. Andrews is actually hosting the Senior Open Championship, right? I mean, they've hosted 29 championships, for the PGA and two women's opens, but they've never hosted a Senior Open Championship. So that should be fun.
It's really exciting. There's really no place like St. Andrews, whether it's the golf course, the town of St. Andrews, how it's a public park. Yeah, it's just maybe the greatest golf course in the world, but certainly the greatest golf place in the world with the history there. And we enjoy going there. I would go to St. Andrews and not play golf. I love the area so much. So really looking forward to it. We're bringing some friends over that are going to stay in a house with us and just have a great week.
I love St. Andrews. So it's such a historical town and quaint town, and I like walking around the cemetery, you know, and looking, seeing the old Tom Morris grave sites and all the history there. It's just amazing. But how are you preparing for it, Brad Faxon?
You're
working a lot.
I've kind of stopped being a full-time golfer. I hit a lot of golf balls yesterday. I play in the pro-am today for the CBS, play in the our tournament tomorrow, and then I'll play a lot the first week in July, getting ready to go over there and just trying to get my game in shape to play. But I know I'll feel the inspiration of St. Andrews. It will be a big help for me. I've played there in a lot of open championships before and can't wait to get over there.
I guess the question is, how does anyone stop 60-year-old Bernhard Langer? I mean, the guy's unbelievable. He had his best year on tour last year. He won like 7 times, right?
It's incredible. He keeps defying all odds. He is in fantastic condition. I think mentally he's as strong as any player in the game. He was in contention at the Masters 2 years ago at 58 years old. And you know, he's waking up every day thinking about how he can still get better at that age. And it's not only remarkable, it's worthy of so much praise and
right.
recognition.
What an inspiration.
Because, yeah, no, and he hits it very long. He still putts amazingly well. He's overcome those conditions we like to call the yips. He's come back from that several times, and you shake your head sometimes. You just look at him and you just laugh.
I mean, is it possible to be stronger as a 60-year-old than at 55, which is actually what Scott McCarron said of him, of Bernhard Langer? He's stronger now at 60 than he was when he was 55.
Right. He certainly doesn't think of age as a limit, and I love that attitude that some of the greats have, like a Tom Brady, you know, that just thinks they can keep getting better. If you do the right things in your life and how you approach living, you know, whether it's eating, fitness, attitude, all those things, he's doing better than everybody else, at least by a little percentage.
Now, you built a reputation, Brad, as one of the best pure putters in golf. How did you become such a good putter?
It's so funny. you know, I keep thinking about when I grew up. I was a Rhode Islander and a caddy at this great course, an old Donald Ross course called Rhode Island Country Club. And I used to go there as a kid, ride my bike to caddy. And then my dad was a good player, and I'd caddy for him a lot at another course on Cape Cod, a fabulous place called Eastwood Hope. And when I was there last week doing a little outing and thinking about how much break were in these greens that I played as a kid. So when I was caddying for players and helping them to read putts, That to me was what was really the inspiration for my good short game, was learning how to read a putt and watching the golf ball roll. And people always want the shortcut. They want the answer. You know, what's the one thing you can tell me? Like, you could put it on in a jar and sell it on the shelf.
Exactly, yeah. You should.
and when I say it's time, you know, that's what's the answer. People don't want that. They don't really want to hear that. Time is important to be great at it. But, you know, there's all kinds of methods of reading greens now that are coming out. Let's take the aim point, how to read greens, as an example.
Right.
Which is, a cool way to try to do it. But that takes time, too, to learn. And it's singularly the hardest thing to do is to help someone that's new to the game to read a putt.
Sure.
And it's experience. And that's one of the answers I give everybody. It was kind of the organic way in which I grew up and how I learned without even knowing what I was doing.
Well, that brings me to my next question. Do you think good putters are born or do they develop?
Well, there's no question they develop. And it's okay. Actually an insult to a good putter, and particularly to me, that when people say, oh, you're lucky, you're just good. Like, I didn't have to go practice or I didn't have to work, or that, like I said before, the hours and hours or the days and the years of being out there weren't part of that. So I take offense to it. I worked as hard as anybody ever, and not just on what the stroke looks like, the face and the path, the relationship, but how I approach the game with having to have an attitude and an acceptance, which is very important when you're a putter. And, you know, everybody that's listening there, if they've seen, you know, played the game and know what it's like to keep missing, you know, how do you keep your attitude strong in those situations? And that's the hardest part about this game.
That's right. I know you helped Rory McIlroy right before he went on to win Bay Hill, you know, but, you know, he's been up and down since then. So has Jordan Spieth. What would you tell those guys if you could talk to them right now about putting?
Why, it's a great question. You know, Jordan Spieth is, he's played so well, and he putted as well as anybody that's ever played the game a couple years ago, and he's made a huge switch in his greens and regulation statistics from just 3 years ago when he was almost 100th in green and regulation to now he's in the top two or three or four the last couple of years. And you know, sometimes putting statistics and greens and regulation are inversely related. And for some reason, he's finding a way that he's putting a little more pressure on himself. Maybe he's not putting as well from long distance. Maybe that's harder to maintain. He's missed some shorter putts, but I wouldn't know what to tell him unless we had a conversation about his approach, his attitude, what he's thinking, what he's seeing. And there's no doubt that most of the time when people struggle like that, they're trying too hard and they're worried a little bit more about the result than they normally do. And that's, gosh, I think that's hard to figure out sometimes in just 1 second. And, you know, he's under the tutelage of a great instructor, a performance coach named Cameron McCormick, and they're working on it all the time, and I hope they get it because Jordan Spieth's important to this game.
Absolutely. Brad, thank you so much. We could go on and on and on. I have so many other things I'd love to talk to you about. But, hey, good luck at St. Andrews. That sounds really, really exciting.
I'm excited. Well, thanks. Nice to be on your show, and good seeing you as always, Les.
Yeah, thanks. And good luck with the CVS Health Charity Classic as well.
Thank you. Bye.
Brad Faxon, thanks so much.